So we are at the beginning of the second half of Katha Upanishad, where Yama speaks. He continues his teaching. Paranchikhani vyatranat svayambhustasmat parang pasyati nantaratman. Kaschidhira Pratyag Atmanam Aikshad Avritta Chakshur Amritatvam Icchan. Yama speaks, the self-born has set the doors of the body to face outwards. Therefore the soul of man gazes outward and not at the self within. Hardly a wise man here and there desiring immortality turns his eyes inward and sees the self within him. Actually, hardly can be extended in the meaning. Not only hardly a wise man, but if we extend the presence of hardly, it may move till the end of the sentence, and then it would mean that turns his sight inside and sees his self. Yeah, we discussed this last time.
I think we're at the end of
the end?
Chapter.
No, we didn't get that far.
We didn't?
No, no, no.
We did start.
We finished the first half, I remember. Yes, we started with this. But I want to start with this again, because it makes a foundation for all chapter. So, paranchi khani, interesting, kha. The word kha is rarely used in the sense of hole or the door. We have this word in many other words like sukha or dukha. It's a good space or bad space. So these spaces, paranchi, open outward, vyatranat, he made them, svayambhu, the one, the self-existence. Therefore, param pasyati, the one looks outside, nantaratman, not inside oneself. But kaschidhira pratyak atmanam aikshat, but somebody looked back on oneself, pratyam, prati, pratyanch, yes? Pratyam atmanam aikshat, ikshati, ikshamana. Ikshate, actually, but here it's irregular, Ikshat Parasmaipadam. Usually Iksh is always in Atmanepadam. Avritta Chakshur Amritatvam Icchan. With closed eyes, you know, turned eyes, Amritatvam Icchan, seeking immortality.
This is also interesting that this is, you know, why immortality is mentioned here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you will.
What
we will.
Seeking for what is he seeking?
Yes, we will see today that the whole chapter is absolutely Vedic. It's not at all that I just recovered this vision. Before I saw Katha differently, I saw it was of later time, already in Sankhyayik paradigm. But it is not, it is still there. Though it operates already with rational pictures, which will be used later, in later philosophies. So, parachah kaman Anuyanti balah, tem rityor yanti vitatasya pasham, athadhira amritatvam viditva, dhruvam adhruveshviha, na prarthayanti. The rest childishly follow after desire and pleasure and walk into the snare of death that gapes wide for them. But calm souls, having learned of immortality, seek not for permanence in things of this world that pass and are not. So they are not looking for permanence in things outside, but they are learning or looking for the permanence of things inside. But it doesn't mean that they leave this world. It doesn't say that they move away from this manifestation. They find permanence of things inside, but they stay with impermanence of things outside. And that is the vision of Isha Upanishad, the same, vidya and avidya. The one who knows both, he finds his consciousness of the Lord. The same paradigm. In order to discover his consciousness, one has to have both. Yena rupam rasam gandham shabdan sparshanscha maithunan etenaiva vijanati kimatra parishishyate etadvaitat. By the self one knows form and taste and smell. By the self one knows sound and touch and the joy of man with woman. What is there left in this world of which the self knows not? This is that thou seekest. Now look at this formulation. It's a Vedic formulation. You will not find it later. By the self one knows form and taste and smell. By the self one knows sound and touch. And the joy of man with woman, even maithuna, even that which later is prohibited at all to think about, that self is not there at all, that has to be left. But by the self one knows that. What is there left in this world of which the self knows not? It is because both were united in this perception. The permanence and impermanence, that one knows by the self all impermanent things. The possibility of knowing the world by the self was still there in the Vedic vision. Later it becomes impossible to know the impermanence by permanence. You have to leave it, to drop it and go there. The whole idea of mukti comes with that you have to drop the world. Here, the world is not dropped, it is still kept for the perception of the permanence, by permanence of these impermanent things, and knowing all mundane things, even mithuna, even the relation of man and woman, is included into this knowledge. That is that, this is that thou seekest, he says. Svapnantam jagaritantam jagaritantam chobhav yena anupashyati mahantam vibhum atmanam matva dhiro nashochati. The calm soul, having comprehended the great Lord, the omnipresent self by whom one beholds both to the end of dream and to the end of waking, ceases from grieving. Now again, the same affirmation which I am trying to say. The calm soul, having comprehended the great Lord, His consciousness, the omnipresent self, omnipresent, present everywhere, and all mundane things as beyond, by whom one beholds both, to the end of dream, that it means the Svapna state, the state of subtle or inward state, and to the end of waking, in our awakened consciousness, ceases from grieving. Only then one is ceasing from grieving. Otherwise, if we are seeking only permanence outside, transcendental, there is much to grieve still here. That's what Buddha was looking for. He was looking for the remedy against suffering. And he found it beyond. But there is other remedy of suffering. To find Lord's consciousness, omnipresent self, which is embracing both halves. And that is real end of grief. That's why I say it's purely Vedic. Ya imam madhvadam veda atmanam jivam antikat ishanam bhuta bhavyasya natato vijugupsate etadvaitat. The one, ya imam madhu adam veda. Madhu adam, eating madhu. Rare word. The one who knows this, who partakes of joy or of this enjoyment in the world, madhu adam, tastes the madhu. Atmanam, the self, jivam, the soul, antikat, very closely, intimately knows him. Ishanam, the Lord, of bhuta and bhavya, of that which was and that which will be, natato vijugupsate, shrinks not thereafter from aught, nor abhors any, as Sri Aurobindo translates it. Etat vaitat, this is that thou seekest. As Yama speaks to Nachiketas, what you seek. You seek the one who partakes of all enjoyments in this world, the jiva, the soul, the self, Atmana. Within that is Lord of what was and what shall be, shrinks not thereafter from aught nor abhors any. It's very close to the Isha's consciousness. But he, interestingly, before it was said about the enjoyer, you remember the chariot? The charioti buddhi, the one who sits Atman, the horses, the indriyas, the paths are the objects of sense, and he and their reins, manas, controlling the horses. That was the picture. But there was one more person there, was not mentioned, not located, the bhokta, the enjoyer of the whole thing. The whole scene is enjoyed by bhokta, who is not located, has no location. So here we have this madhvadam, veda, the bhokta, the enjoyer of the honey of this creation or manifestation. He is the self and he is the soul, intimately known. And he is the Lord of everything which was and will be. And the one who knows him. He is not shrinking from the world. Natato vijugupsate. Interesting word, jugupsate. It's jugupsa is desirative from Gopayati to hide. Jugupsa is desire to hide. Desire to hide is to shrink. He doesn't have this desire, fear. He doesn't have this tension or this shrinking tendency in him to separate himself from the events outside or inside, because he found the source, the real bhokta. This phrase is used in the Isha Upanishad the same way. Natato jugupsate. And etadvaitat is added to the rhythm. You can see that metrically it's not fitting here. Yav purvam tapaso jatam adbyav purvam ajayata guham pravishya tishthantam yo bhutebhir vyapashyata etadvaitat. And here it's quite interesting. You see, I'm making this yellow underlining. Yaha, the one purvam tapasah jatam adbhyav purvam ajayata guham pravishyatishthantam yo bhutebhir vyapashyata etadvaitat. Now look at this. He is the seer that sees him who came into being before austerity and was before the waters, deep in the heart of the creature. He sees him. For there he stands by the mingling of the elements. This is that thou seekest. Now here we have the whole picture of the first creation. This is first emanation of the... He is the seer that sees him who came into being before austerity, purvam tapasa jatam, or the one who was born before the tapas was made, before the movement towards first creation, adbhyav purvam ajayata, the one who was born before the waters of inconscient. Yeah, because adbhyav, apas, is always used in that sense. These are waters in which embryo was put. By tapas, by force of tapas he was born, the creation was born. Guham pravishya, having entered into the cave of heart, tishthantam, standing there, yaha, the one, bhutebhih vyapashyata, who is seen clearly, distinguished by bhutebhih, by the beings, by the creatures. He can be reached by the creatures and distinguished deeply within the cave of their heart. He is always there, the one who was before the creation came into being. This is what you are seeking, etadvaitat. But what is interesting here, that it can be distinguished, it is distinguished by all beings, bhutebhih vyapashyata, by all creatures born, can be found within their heart. This is the dynamism of the truth.
Where do you see all creatures?
Bhutebhih. And Sri Aurobindo says he stands by the mingling of the elements. He translates bhutas as elements. Actually, he translates many things here in, I think, in his early period. I can see it clearly because he speaks about austerity, and later he would not translate tapas as austerity. It's something else altogether. Tapas is that effort to create, that concentration of consciousness which he produced, that heat of consciousness when he created the world. And since here we have waters mentioned together with tapas, it's obviously the image of that Vedic image of creation. Yeah. Well, if you want to have it by elements, we can also dwell on it in this way and see what it gives us, because I'm sure there will be something there.
I like both austerity and elements.
All right.
And the reason why is because austerity implies an effort at creation. Mm-hmm. And the effort to create something other than what is, mm-hmm. to go beyond, to transcend. But this, which was there before the elements, is there even if you don't make an effort to find it outside or to find it beyond something, because it was already there to start with. And this seems to be the ultimate subjective basis of anything which is known. Which is why you can find it in all of those other things.
Right. Well, I don't think there is a big difference between two interpretations. Do you see the difference? If you associate austerities with a creator, yeah. So how far he could be austere if he alone was? So there was tapas has another application when you alone there concentrate all your consciousness for the purpose of becoming something else or somebody else. And of course the same will be applicable to any man who wants to achieve something. Any achievement is coming through the concentration or some kind of austerity or selection or one-pointedness. Concentration of consciousness. So, in a way, they are universally meaningful in both senses. But I don't see much more of input from bhutebhih as elements. Elements and creatures. I don't yet see that. Before elements, because it is vyapashyata, seen clearly by vyapashyata, yes, atmanepadam, vyapashyata. Yaha vyapashyata, the one who is seen bhutebhih by the elements. Doesn't make sense to me fully, if I literally translate.
The idea that the thing you seek, the eater of the sweets, stands by virtue of the elements coming together. Mm-hmm. It doesn't stand outside of the elemental creation. It stands by virtue of the elemental creation. So you are able to see him there because that is him.
No, that's what I, yes, but I put by creatures. By all creatures which came into being from him, because they know him because they are him.
Maybe he meant elements of creation.
Yes.
Because he already used the creature and it also he meant maybe he was in the elements of creation, it means creatures.
Yes. But yeah, all right. Let us see. Maybe there is a meaning in it, because next you see I underlined again. And it will repeat itself, but in other terms. And it is quite interesting why Katha continues in the same manner. Ya pranena sambhavati aditir devatamayi. And so suddenly the Divine Mother is mentioned, and all is in feminine gender. First is in masculine, yaha. And then we have ya pranena sambhavati aditir devatamayi. Guham pravishyati shtantim. She entered into the cave of the heart, standing there, she, ya, she, who, vyajayata bhutebhi, who is
mingling with the elements again, how is it handled?
Yes, I do not know what it means now. Now I will have to who is born clearly out by the creatures or by the elements, who is vyajayata. It has no meaning, vyajayata, being born outwardly or in detail. Who is being born in detail, who came into being in detail. Now Sri Aurobindo puts, by the mingling of the elements had her being. Now he adds this being, being born, in detail. But both, if elements are here, it would make sense. First, to see, to perceive in consciousness, and then to come in terms of being, to bring it into being in terms of form or manifestation. To perceive it first in the consciousness and then to bring it into power, into the creation. So in first sense it is he, in the second sense, in the second verse it is she. Can be he and she in this sense. The creator and the creatrix, his Shakti. And the third verse also continues, and we have one more element to look into, Agni. Aranyoh nihito jata veda garbhaiva subhrito garbhinibhih dive dive iriya dive diva iriya jagrivadbhih havishmadbhir manushyebhih Agnih, etadvaitat. As a woman carries with care the unborn child in her womb, so is the master of knowledge lodged in the tinders. These two tinders which produce the fire, if you rub them. And day by day should man worship him, who live the waking life and stand before him with sacrifices, for he is that Agni. This is that thou seekest. Now here we have the final. These are three verses. I think they are all related. There is first he with his perception and consciousness, then it is she who brings and manifests everything in power, in being, and the third one, that child with whom one is pregnant, that Hiranyagarbha, that one you are seeking. You are seeking the one, the Father, the Holy Spirit, and the Son.
The Holy Spirit is the Divine Mother?
Yes, the Divine Mother. Does it make sense? Now, after this, there will be a shift into another. These three are quite clearly Vedic, because before the tapas was made and before the movement was taken towards the creation, purvam tapaso jatam yaha etadvaita, that is what you seek. You seek the transcendental Godhead before he moved into creation. It is by those elements he is known or mingled with, he is clearly seen. Yeah? Well, what it means, what it implies, most probably on one level of supramental consciousness, it is known. And also it is she who is pranena sambhavanti. This is Aditi, the mother of the gods, who was born through the prana, and by the mingling of the elements had her being. So we have this prana thing. Deep in the heart of things she has entered. There she is seated. This is that thou seekest. And the final one, as a woman carries with care the unborn child in her womb, So is the master of knowledge lodged in the tenders. Now the father becomes the son. He is lodged in the pregnant woman, as a pregnant woman as Aditi will carry the child. Thus he is also lodged in the tenders. And day by day should man worship him there in manifestation, because he has to be visible, he has to manifest. Who live in waking life here in the body and stand before him here in the body with sacrifices, bringing to his growth of consciousness here all he is and he has. It reminds me of one text from uncanonized Christian literature, by the way, the Gospel of Eve. And it's interesting, where the God says to her, he says to her, "You think that I created all this in vain? When you gather those fruits in the garden," he says, "what you actually gather with those apples, you gather yourself. And with gathering yourself with those apples, you gather myself." It's an interesting, very cryptic, very mystical statement. Here we have very similar vision of oneness of this manifestation of the Lord. Yatah chodeti surya astam yatra cha gacchati tam devah sarve arpitah tat u natyeti kashchana etadvaitat. He from whom the sun arises and to whom the sun returns, and in him all the gods established, none passes beyond him. This is that thou seekest. He from whom the sun arises and to whom the sun returns. Now this rising of the sun is another image, Vedic image. If we have this in Purnamadav Purnamidam, Purnat, from the fullness, Purnam Udachyate, the fullness arises. From the fullness arises. Makes no sense, no? How do you locate it spatially? From the fullness arises. So, he from whom the sun arises. Arises where? If from him, and to whom the sun returns, and in him all the gods established, in him are all the gods established, none passes beyond him. And it's also an interesting statement, because none passes beyond him. There is nothing beyond him. The idea that there may be something beyond him is not real.
It might be good to think about Gebser's analysis of this early
thinking
consciousness, mm-hmm. in which there is no space-time differentiation. Mm-hmm. So time is not, space is not perceived as a perspective, a three-dimensional mm-hmm. perspective. Space and time are what is present. Mm-hmm. So that which rises, whether it's the sun or whether it's your own energy, it's in the same bowl. Mm-hmm. It's not perceived as something out in space.
What is interesting in this kind of rational definition of Gebser is that with a rational mind, he formulates a rationalistic statement about these matters which are not rational. And what happens is that he loses the track, of course, because it becomes rational statement, but it is becoming a link for us to widen our horizons of perception, at the same time remaining rational. And that makes a very interesting change. We can be rational, and we can be also super-rational, or pre-rational, as you like, infra-rational. But these statements are, though they are not operating with rationality yet, they have their own value. When a rational mind makes this statement that they do not have notion of space and time, it sounds like judgment, but it is not judgment.
I think they are revelations.
Yes, these are of some kind revelations.
Yeah, you cannot fix it.
Yes.
Rational mind.
Yes.
It's not possible.
Yes.
Because you feel it somehow deeper. It exists beyond our rational mind, so we accept it. It makes us a little bit different in this moment.
But what it helps, in my view, that he moves towards the integral perception. And in that integral perception, rationality takes its part. And if it is not introduced, the fullness will not occur in full sense. We will not be able to deal with this image. Fully. They can conceive some great achievements in the future, but they can't be final.
I think it's also interesting that a rational mind, a well-developed rational mind, went through a process which enabled him to identify with a pre-rational mind, so that he could actually visualize from the imagery a way of understanding which was not rational, which was not spatial and not temporal. And this is the Jungian the movement away from analysis into a kind of universal unconscious perception. There's a way that they found of moving themselves into the pre-rational world and dwelling there for some years until they realize that it's different.
We can clearly see that it is different, but what happened to Gebser, he realized that there was a force behind, conducive to this discovery, as he identified as Sri Aurobindo's presence. And it is, in that sense, we can see also that we need both. Yeah? We need rationality and we need this wide presence of consciousness which perceives itself in those terms. Some people who didn't work much on the development of kind of scientific mind or so, yes, they easily identify these imageries. And they are very happy with them because they give them the sense of presence. They recover their consciousness, so to say. And this is the power of these texts, pre-rational texts. It may look like the rationality may spoil them with its narrowing down with formulations, comparison and systematization. And it many times, there is a danger of kind of rationality putting its own seal on those texts. So there has to be a good balance between these. We have to use rationality, but we should not overleap with it. All others saying that they are pre-rational, that means they didn't grow yet to the level where we are. They had their own heights, much higher than rationality can give. So that recognition will help us to put rationality in its own space. Otherwise we will look like, you know, that was the problem with all definition of Sri Aurobindo by his contemporaries. Radha Krishnan and others, who looked into his theory and said that it is very clever and very interesting what he is proposing, but because we are progressing, we cannot take it fully. We cannot imagine that from the Vedic times onwards we were only regressing. So they can't take it that what Sri Aurobindo's theory, that the Vedic concealment of that Vedic age was Satya Yuga's age, was the beginning of all our beginnings, much more luminous than we had afterwards, because of one particular reason that we are progressing, we cannot fully take his statement. That means they didn't see the full circle that what Sri Aurobindo is proposing, that it is narrowing down in order to break through to the wider floods again, as he defines. But what it says also, that it says that the arrogance of rational mind is so strong, as Gebser himself defines this, rationalistic approach is the most arrogant, which wants to everybody to perceive in the way how rational mind perceives, and wants everybody to know as rational mind knows it, otherwise there is no knowledge. This arrogance we also experience in ourselves many times, whenever we become rationalistic in our approaches. So we need this balance of layers of consciousness. And those pre-rational ages were most probably in many regards much truer than that rationalistic age and all the discoveries of rational age which we have later. Don't you think so?
No.
You don't remember? This is a good answer. How rational age came into being, better to ask.
Well, like the mechanisms here, this is our arrogance, as you put it, and so on and so forth.
It's a narrowing down, the mentalization, where the mind is developing in its own terms. It needs to work out its own instrumentations, yes, on its own level.
But this is telling us how it came into being also.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was there before.
It was.
And then it concentrated in the elements.
But it goes so far, like I was purchasing recently an Upanishad book in German, or these Upanishads, and that man is comparing 100 years ago all these thoughts with Greek, with all the philosophies of the Western, and rationally it makes sense with them. He says, very good, what a thinking. Whenever the picture changes, like here, he criticizes them, like, oh, now they are lost and they're fools. And, this mindset was very strong for 100 years ago.
It's no wonder. No wonder.
He's judging him all the time from his own.
Let us look into Mr. Archer, in Foundations of Indian Culture, how Sri Aurobindo criticizes Archer with all his rationalistic approach, who is judging all the time Indian culture, Vedic age and Vedantic age, which he cannot have access to, he doesn't have means. So, but both are necessary for our development, and that's the important message which Gebser gives. And his recognition of Sri Aurobindo's influence is most valuable, because that puts everything into right perspective. Okay, let's go on and see what text says more. You mean the whole thing? Okay, all right. Yes, all right, I understand. Okay, you want to see previous one or next? Like this?
No.
Like this?
More.
Okay, this line is underlining what we have to see. That's what. I sometimes like to see the reference to the previous one. All right, number 9. Is it number 9?
It's number
10. Number 10. Yadiveha yadamutra tadamutra yadamutra tadanviha. Mrityoh sa mrityum apnoti yaiha nana iva pashyati naneva pashyati. This is like the Hermes Trismegist. Exactly starts with the same statement. What is in this world is also in the other. And what is in the other, that again is in this. Who thinks he sees difference here, from death to death he goes. But in Sanskrit it sounds better. Yad eva iha tad amutra. Yad amutra tad anu iha. Now, why anviha is used and not simply iha or eveha? Because anu means respectively here. Now, that which is indeed here, that is there, and which is indeed there, that is respectively here. Following that, it is here. A subtle kind of drop of some. And the one who doesn't see the difference here, nana eva pashyati, he is reaching from death to death. Mrityoh samrityum apnoti. Who sees difference here, yes? Who thinks he sees difference here? It's even better, yes? Said in English. From death to death he goes. Now, what does it say, really? Is there no difference in this world? Or there is a difference?
In the agenda, mother's experiences tell about her moving between the two worlds and there being no difference.
You mean life and death?
Life and death, or, yeah, it's exactly the same. And so earlier we had this phrase about the snare of death, you know, and I was thinking that in ancient scriptures all over the world, they use death as something so scary and, you know, something to fear. And if you really read what Fyodorovna and Mother have understood, death is nothing. It really isn't anything. It's life to life, actually, that whole thing.
It's an interesting statement, from life to life is one vision and from death to death is another. So we can move from death to death or from life to life.
Depending on our attitude.
I think that death exists with the outer, the physical, the material. Yes. It's not permanent. So the life is eternal life in the life. So death is a fear, as Krishna said, and it's separation. And it's make us separate one life which we live inside and other life which we live outside. So if we see what is outside, we move from death to death.
It's also a very important word you use, separate. Yeah? Exactly, separation is that what death does. Yes? It separates something in consciousness, shapes out the manifestation in all its varieties. But varieties can be seen as differences. And on those differences, the death is basing itself.
In any case, if one stops seeing the difference, then one achieves that universal consciousness or transcendental consciousness. If one begins to see it like that, for a long way.
But here the comparison is with that and this. And the Hermist, you know, Hermetism, he has one treatise, it's on one page, the shortest one. I forgot how it is called. In English I do not know, I know in Russian, unfortunately. These things I read in Russian long ago. Изумрудная скрижаль. That which is there is identical with this which is here. This is the Sri Aurobindo's or David's star. Yeah? And that which is here is identical with what is there. Now the statement says, the one who sees the difference between the two follows the, from death to death. But one who sees that they are identical, one who sees that the whole manifestation comes from that source, and is that, he moves then most probably from life to life. He doesn't see the difference. He sees the life. He sees the source, and he sees the manifestation of the source. But if he sees the difference, he will move from death to death, where the shaping of this manifestation will be done by death. And now we have one more interesting word. Manasai vedam aptavyam nehananasti kinchana mrityoh samrityum gacchati yaihananeva pasyati. Through the mind must we understand that there is nothing in this world that really varies. Who thinks he sees difference here, from death to death he goes. Through the mind. Manasaiva idam aptavyam. It is by the mind we have to realize, to understand that there is nothing in this world that really varies.
I would dispute that.
Yeah, what does that mean?
Everything in this world varies.
But listen to this statement. It is by the mind it varies. And by the mind we should see that it does not vary also. And if we do that by the mind, then we are safe.
I think we just talked about Jean Gelser understanding exactly that through the mind.
Right.
And he understood that nothing really varies. But he did it through his mind.
He got to the oneness of the thing.
Absolutely. How did he get that?
He can see that there is one that varies.
Yes, but if you see oneness, then you see unity.
There's a big danger. There's a big danger in just becoming the. You know, the Mayavada kind of point of view, where it's only that which doesn't vary which is important and true, and all of that which varies is the illusion. But just before that, we're told that they are one, that both are true, one is in the other. But now we're being told nothing really varies.
But it is in the context of the previous. Just not forget that context of the previous. If we cut off, of course, then...
So it's seeing unity in diversity. Mm.
Nothing really, huh?
It says that through the mind we must understand. But through the mind we know what it means. What is it that it goes through the mind? Is it our thoughts or is it something...
And also there is something else. There is nothing in this world that really varies. Now if I put this
it
really...
It appears to vary.
Yeah, it varies. But really,
E equals MC squared.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. If it didn't vary, we wouldn't have the enjoyment of both.
Yes. So but
it varies externally.
Yes.
On the surface.
It varies,
but
yes.
It can be perceived.
Yeah.
But it's meant to vary, isn't it?
It is meant.
Meant to vary.
It looks for that variation. It wants it. That's why the manifestation is here.
But
nothing really, truly varies.
If you understand that it's not really.
Yes. That means you introduce to your rationality or to your mind, introduce one more layer, which is uniting. And if these two can be vidya and avidya, the knowledge of the whole and the knowledge of the part, if they can be combined, that is exactly that. But if they are, one of those dominates, then we have either Mayavada or any other concept coming, or rational concept of scientific vision of the world.
And both of those are dangerous.
Yeah.
In this kind of statement.
Yes, for this kind of purpose.
They're dangerous if they are misinterpreted.
If they try to destroy the other view, yes.
There will be lots of people who look at it through a very really narrow perspective and translate literally word for word and then see just that.
Not only that, but if you look back at the history of thinking, for centuries, the main problem that was dealt with was the problem of whether the essence of reality is change or the opposite of change, which is permanence. And so you have the whole line of thinking which comes from Heraclitus, which says everything is change, and from Parmenides, which says everything is permanent. I mean, the truth is one, and it's unchanging. And so that's a real paradox for the understanding.
For the rational mind.
It's also a paradox for that pre-rational mind, because
Heraclitus
and Parmenides were pre-rational minds also.
Yeah,
and they had mystical followings and practiced transcendental meditation and learned how to dematerialize the body and so on, and they argued about whether it's all one or whether it's all in flux.
The same issues are discussed in Upanishads of permanence and impermanence. So they are also not yet fully rational, but they are on the way to rationality. And it's quite interesting to see how they build up from the Vedic, yes? How, what new elements are entering, because Vedic is purely pre-rational. And Upanishadic is already, has a tendency towards rationalization. The same in Greek philosophers. Unfortunately, we have only those who already have that tendency. We have hardly anybody who was purely pre-rational in a Greek philosophy.
Yeah, I think one we have to see is who thinks he sees the difference. Who thinks, again, the mind is there. So in the first words, the words about who thinks he sees the difference. Still, you know, the mind is there. In the second verse, they see he tells us reason is the helper, reason is the bar. He says not through the mind we'll have to go through. And then this who thinks is very.
Well, it's a way of saying it because there is only pashyati here, yeah? There is no thinking person. Yeah? But what is interesting here that comes to my mind, the aphorism of Sri Aurobindo is, the mind was the helper and mind becomes a bar. It's exactly where we are. So by the mind which became a bar, we have to liberate ourselves. It is the way of liberation. It was a way to become slaves. And now, by the same way, we have to see the oneness. And that is really the process. Not by other means, not by putting it aside, mind, putting aside saying the mind cannot see because mind is rational. No, mind should see. Mind should discover the oneness. And in that sense, we can understand all Mother's statements about objectivity in the rational thinking, in the scientific thinking. She said they are not objective enough. If they would be objective enough, you remember we had a talk of Binu Mukherjee, and he said that Mother told him that scientific mind is not objective enough. That's the problem. If they would be objective enough, they would find the truth faster. And it makes sense in this particular context. And now we are moving to interesting statement. Angushta matrah purusho madhya atmani tishtati ishano bhuta bhavyasya natato vijugupsate etat vaitat. The purusha who is seated in the midst of ourself is no larger than the finger of man. We usually say no bigger than the thumb of man. He is the Lord of what was and what shall be. Him having seen, one shrinks not from aught, nor abhors any. This is that thou seekest. Now, angushta matra purushah hridi guhayam, in other texts, in the cave of the heart, there is a man no bigger than a thumb. It's like Thumbelina, Thumbelin.
Oh, she's
different. The psychic being, or the psychic presence in the heart of man, the purusha, who is seated in the midst of ourself, is no larger than the finger of a man, is the Lord of what was and what shall be. Well, the concept of the psychic being. Yeah?
There is a very beautiful meditation offered by Sankhya Chakra. You imagine your heart as a lotus and see how beautiful your flower is, or it is tired, or it is fresh. And you see yourself like a small tambourine, which is helping those petals to be straighter and more fresh. And let open this lotus to the sunlight which sun rays. You know? And it's very much corresponding to me when I see this beautiful procedure in the midst of this. I just propose to people, maybe they would sometimes imagine themselves like
that. Yeah, lotus heart with Thumbelina inside.
But it's yourself which is loved by Mother Earth and Mother Sky. This love is unconditional.
In English, soul has a gender? Do you have a soul? Is it he or she or?
It.
Yes, now it is all it. But before, in 19th century, 18th, it was she, huh?
No.
Soul.
I don't think so. Well,
in German, it's she.
If you look at the Latin, the origin of it, and it has, in English, it has a Latin.
All right. Okay.
Nobody in English has never had gender.
No, you have genders. Shubindu even uses them in Savitri. I was many times puzzled by this. You know, for example, love is he with his wings, love.
Who, that's the way he chooses to portray.
No, I'm not sure.
I don't think it's an English language.
I'm not sure.
Maybe because it gives him as a blonde.
Yeah, he personifies love.
Are you sure about this? He would not do that. He would not make his own gender to his English language. He would use something which was used before.
But love is personified by, you know, Cupid.
Yes.
Yeah.
He is a she.
Yeah, Cupid is okay, but love as he.
Eros.
Okay. Well,
but agape has no gender at all, I think.
Because in a Russian we have soul is she.
Yeah.
French also she, right. German also she.
But isn't gender accidental, sort of?
Accidental in English. In English, it is accidental.
We'll have to discuss
in French, it's she.
Our souls will meet in heaven. The division of these souls, of their gender, and all that is just not part of it.
But in Hindu metaphysics, it's always, isn't it feminine?
What?
The soul?
Soul, no?
No, masculine.
Symbolic, no, not the word soul. I'm thinking about the symbolism of Krishna and
Radha.
All the other females.
It's interesting, yes, Krishna and Radha. Yeah, yes.
Every other soul is the feminine that yearns for the one.
Yes.
Not the word.
In relations, yes.
Symbolic.
And even in Vedic vision, if we could take it, Aditi, of course, Aditi and all her manifestation, and even Sri Aurobindo's interpretation of the psychic as mother's presence. We are all children of the mother. We are all of her creation. Yes, we belong to her, to she. But of course. Purely Vedantic is Purusha, yes? He is even here mentioned, Purusha. It is he.
Man. Very important. In Christianity, there's the sheep. Sheep shall safely graze with shepherd, and so on. But again, sheep just don't really have any gender. Then talk about rams and so on. They put it, but somehow the
lamb.
Sheep is a sheep.
This ram.
Lamb.
This
well, lamb
innocent.
Is
yeah.
R-A-M-M.
Yes, ram and lamb. This innocent lamb which was asked by Abraham, by the God from Abraham to bring to sacrifice instead of his son. No? So he had to bring a lamb, pure, white lamb. And that was the shift in tradition of sacrificing the nature towards the sacrifice of the soul. It's an esoteric history.
Yeah, but it has no gender, is the only point.
Yeah, yeah. I mean to say that, yes, lamb also is it. Yes. Okay, angushta matra purusho jyotir iva adhumakah ishano bhuta bhavyasya sa eva dhya sa ushvaha etadvaita. The purusha that is within us is no larger than the finger of a man. He is like a blazing fire that is without smoke. He is Lord of his past and of his future. He alone is today, and he alone shall be tomorrow. This is that thou seekest. And it's also a very powerful statement. Sa evadya sa ushvaha. And Sri Aurobindo makes it even more emphatic. He alone is today, and he alone shall be tomorrow. So tomorrow there will be nothing of that which is not him. Only him will be tomorrow.
But he has everything, so it's okay.
It's okay.
It's scary.
No, he's not everything in that sense. There is something which he is on the way to be. So, and the last two, yatha udakam durge vrishtam, and it's a very interesting comparison. Yatho udakam durge vrishtam parvateshu vidhavati evam dharman prithak pashyan stan evanu vidhavati. As water that rains in the rough and difficult places runs to many sides of the mountain tops. The mountain tops are difficult, rocky places, and the water runs. So he that sees separate law and action of the one spirit follows in the track of what he sees. If you see that track, that mountain, clearly how it runs, you follow the track. And you see the difference. Yathodakam shuddhi shuddham asiktam tadrik eva bhavati evam munir vijanata atma bhavati gautama. But as pure water that is poured into pure water, even as it was, such it remains. So is it with the soul of the thinker who knows God, who seed of Gautama.
Who is Gautama in this sense?
It is Nachiketa.
His father Nachiketa.
But as pure water that is poured into pure water, that's our self, because we are manifestation of the divine. If that self joins with the divine self, which is the same, even as it was, Angushtamatra Purusha, such it remains, because it was like that. So is it the soul of the thinker who knows God. These are beautiful images. One can keep them in mind. They are creative of, conducive to right thinking. So here we stop for today, and we will end with a mantra and have some tea and cookies. Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahaviryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastu, Ma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. That was Georgian polyphonic choir.